And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. As fans are returning to stadiums, not only are they reconnecting with their favorite teams, but also the ones they hate the most. WVXU's Corey Sharper reports on how one local university is tracking the biggest sports rivalries.
Northern Kentucky University researchers are conducting surveys to gauge rivalries. The project is called No Rivalry. That's KNOW. Professor of Sports Business and Event Management Joe Combs originally looked at how rivalries impacted attendance. However, something wasn't right.
The measures of rivalry were, perhaps we could say, rudimentary.
But that didn't measure all aspects of rivalries. Now, Combs has developed a new method for diehard sports fans. When taking the survey, you pick your favorite team and assign points to the rivals. You answer questions about your love for the team, but that's not all.
Like, how upset would you be if a fan of the rival team married into your family, or if your child became a fan of the rival team, or if you were hiring somebody, how likely would you be to hire a fan of the rival team?
It also measures how much you enjoy the other team's misfortune.
And that gives us a bit of a rivalry recipe, if you will. So it kind of tells us what are the ingredients that make this particular rivalry what it is.
People cite each day, and students help sort through it. While working on the project, they were dealing with the pandemic. COVID-19 forced the students to work online. Business student Jonah Krebs says it was a blessing in disguise.
I actually found it almost easier being online. I had more time to work on the project, so being online definitely helped.
The project found rival teams still hate each other. For example, the research shows the Red Sox and Yankees have the most heated MLB rivalry. And yes, most everyone hates the New England Patriots. What may shock you is how lopsided they are. NKU's Cobbs again.
Reds Cardinals is an example of an unbalanced one where, you know, the Reds fans see it as a rivalry, Cardinals fans much less so.
Now, to be fair, the Reds haven't been that successful recently. They made the playoffs last year, but that was the first time in almost a decade. The research shows fans from different generations may be seeing rivalries differently. Not all fans are growing up in the glory days of their favorite teams. Business student Krebs gives an example with the NBA.
One of the top 10 rivalries was the Warriors and Cavs, which, I mean, they played in the finals 4 years in a row, but other than that, you know, that before that, it really wasn't a rivalry. And now, I mean, those two teams, I couldn't even tell you when they played. It used to be the primetime game on Christmas Day. Now it's, you know, they're just Tuesday night.
Some fans were able to experience their favorite team's glory days, including my Cincinnati Public Radio colleague, Howard Wilkinson. He went to his first Reds game when he was 6, and in college, he saw the big red machine.
The great 8 of the Reds, you know, one of the best lineups that ever stepped onto a baseball field. And you want to talk about rivalry? In those days, the biggest rivalry in baseball, and I'm not kidding you, was the Reds and the Los Angeles Dodgers.
But not anymore. Now the Reds don't even measure as a Dodgers rival. So why did Howard consider them one?
They were two teams where the players, they hated each other. And that's what a good rivalry is. You can't have a rivalry in baseball unless the players just really don't like each other.
It comes down to your experience, and that varies generationally.
However recent it is, or in my case, how far back it goes, you're going to view it through that prism. And that's just natural.
Methods may change in the future to factor in different age groups. The goal is to show accurate data, but NKU senior Lily Ronan says making changes to the research too soon could throw off the data.
I think it would be too soon to say definitively, like, this needs to change. I think there needs more time for it to kind of hit the ground and get more momentum before things start to get altered.
And while the rivalries might not be the same ones they once were, sports fans will have rivalries for generations to come. Corey Sharper, 91.7 WVXU.
And let's talk more about that right now with one of the people you heard in that feature from Corey Sharper, Northern Kentucky University sports business professor, Joe Combs. Joe, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Michael.
And also joining us on the phone to talk about historic Cincinnati Reds rivalries is author and sports journalist John Arardi. John, welcome back to our program.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Joe, let's go back to you. I heard Howard Wilkinson from here at WVXU tell Corey that what's important in a rivalry is when players hate each other. Did that factor into your research at all?
Yeah, it does somewhat. Now, the way in the No Rivalry Project, the way that we measure rivalry is strictly from the fans' perspective. So we, all of our survey data, interview data comes from the fans. However, fans certainly pick up on, you know, how passionate the players are towards certain opponents. So in that way, I think it certainly influences our research and the way that we measure it.
Why go into this? Why measure this? What was interesting about this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a couple different reasons, some positive and some negative, which is part of what makes rivalry so fascinating. So on the positive side, you know, I'm in our sports business program at NKU, is in our College of Business. And so we're thinking about the revenues and expenses associated with sports organizations. And it could be the broadcast partners or the sponsors that are also involved. But we know through quite a bit of research, not just my own, but what other researchers have done, that when fans perceive a certain opponent to be a rival, it increases demand for those games. So higher TV ratings, sponsorships are more valuable, higher attendance potentially as well. And on the negative side, fortunately, we haven't seen as much of this in North America, but we know that when two teams see each other in sort of a heightened degree of animosity, it could lead to violence or antisocial behaviors. And within our research project, we measure sort of the prejudice and the discrimination toward rival fans as a measure of that antisocial effect. So by understanding rivalry, what we're hoping is that some of the positive aspects can be magnified while at the same time without increasing those negative effects.
I think we know the phrase to live rent-free in someone's head, which is the idea of somebody who, you know, is obsessed with you, but you don't pay them any mind, right? And it seems like you did measure some of these lopsided rivalries, including one involving the Reds. So apparently Reds fans, according to your data, really dislike the Cardinals. The Cardinals don't really pay much attention to Cincinnati, though. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I think the way that we measure it, we give fans. So if you go to the website, which is knowrivalry.com, you can take the survey and it asks you what's your favorite team. And then once you indicate that, then you have 100 rivalry points that you can allocate over any of that team's opponents. And then there's some, you know, follow-up questions to that. And what we find is that Reds fans will allocate a majority of their points to the Cardinals, but the Cardinals don't reciprocate. You know, they give most of their points to the Cubs. And so that creates an imbalance in how each side sees the rivals of their particular team. And the Reds Cardinals ends up being the sixth most imbalanced rivalry in Major League Baseball. And actually, you know, sticking with our local teams here, we have the same issue with the Bengals, where the Bengals Steelers rivalry is the second most unbalanced rivalry in the NFL by our measure.
I mean, Bengal fans really loathe the Steelers, but you're telling me that the Pittsburgh Steelers don't really care about the Bengals at all. They don't look at it the same way.
Unfortunately, yes. I think that, you know, a big part of understanding rivalry and the social psychology behind it is this idea of threat. And the Bengals just don't pose, and hopefully this will change, but they don't pose as big of a threat to the Steelers as the Steelers do to the Bengals. And when you ask Steelers fans, you know, who's their biggest rival, they'll say the Ravens. And they'll allocate more of their 100 points to the Ravens. Now, they do still allocate some points to the Bengals. I think it's around 20 of their 100 points. But the Bengals fans are much more, you know, focused on the Steelers than vice versa. And same with the Reds and the Cardinals.
Let's bring in John Arardi, a local author and sports journalist, very familiar with Cincinnati Reds history. John, I don't know, as a fan, if it hurts your heart at all to know that the Reds aren't much of a threat to anyone these days?
You know, as soon as you guys opened the bid talking about would you be willing to marry into a family if the family was a rival of your team, I laughed at that. I laughed at living rent-free in somebody's mind. This, to me, and this is a great survey by the professor, and I love this kind of stuff because there's no rhyme or reason to it. I mean, there's all kinds of things to occupy us during the course of a day, and the thing that should be lowest on a totem pole is how much we hate a team, and yet it is at the top of our totem pole because it kind of drives our emotions. So from that standpoint, yes, I could see Howard Wilkinson's point about L.A., and I still don't like L.A. because, as I mentioned on one of your shows one time, Michael, I'm a dinosaur, so I go back to the 70s, but there's no question that the Cardinals are the team we hate the most because they keep kicking our butt. We can't get by it. They're definitely living rent-free in our mind. They don't even care about us, which makes it even worse, and the same thing with the Steelers. So this is a great topic, and I am really glad you had me available to talk about this because I think emotion is what drives sports. It's what made me a sports writer is because people care about this stuff. So even though I'm amused by it, I made a living off of it. So let's keep going. This is a great topic.
Well, I'm glad. And, you know, I mean, these things are so strange to watch how passionate people can get about hating something that they're not directly involved in, and hating a person, hating a coach, hating a whole organization so irrationally, right. Irrationally and so passionately. It's very bizarre to me. But, John, yep. As a historian of the Reds organization specifically, I mean, the main rival has changed over time. Can you talk a little bit about the dynamics over Reds history that have shifted that hatred from one organization to another?
Yeah, to me, it's almost like a big brother, little brother thing. I mean, I'm the big brother in my family, and I could handle my brother for quite a while, but then he got bigger than me, so it was fair match, so I backed off, obviously. But the team that kicks your butt the most is the team you're going to hate. And even though the Reds kicked the L.A.'s butt for quite a while in the 70s, I mean, that's the team that supplanted the big red machine in 77, 78. And, you know, they went to the World Series. And all of a sudden, it became more balanced. And the Reds fans really hated L.A. then. And the same thing with Pittsburgh. The professor's absolutely right. I covered a game one time with the Steelers, and Ben Roethlisberger, who's from up the road from Finley, Ohio, and of course played in Miami, he owns the Bengals even in this town, and he owns the Browns in their town, which really makes him a hated figure. But that's the kind of thing. You either got to hate a player or you got to hate the team because they're better than you. And, for me, Michael, I think that Milwaukee is kind of coming on. I mean, again, in the dinosaur category, they pretty much stuck into the Reds in 1999, when the Reds could have gone to Milwaukee and won a couple games and not had to deal with that one-game playoff with the Mets, and they would have been in the postseason, but they didn't do it. They come home here, and the Mets take care of them. So I think that the fact that Milwaukee is so good and at the top of the division, I think the potential is there for a rival. I agree with the professor, and I can see why St. Louis really doesn't even hardly consider Cincinnati as somebody that registers on the radar. And to a lesser degree, Pittsburgh feels the same way about us in football. So I kind of think that the history of all this is wonderful, and I think it's a lesson for us. Where's the next rivalry going to come from? And, you know, Milwaukee's just up the road. They're a smaller city like us. They've got a very good team, and they took something we had one time. So they've got great potential. And even though, think about this one, even though San Francisco is in a different division, they're there with L.A. Dodgers. When they came in here and, you know, the Reds had won two games in the 2012 playoffs in San Francisco, came home, only had to win 1 of 3, lost all three, and San Francisco went to the World Series and won it. That was Cincinnati's year. They should have been in the World Series and won it. That's a potential for rivalry. If there's one thing that sticks in this fan base is craw more than anything, and speaking of the Red fans, it's the Giants, because they took what we had. So once they take your lunch away from you and they eat it in front of you, you don't like them. So that's got potential too.
So your advice, John, is it's time for Reds fans to start hating someone else.
Exactly.
So I want to ask.
Although, you know, Michael, I got to say that the point about St. Louis is well taken. I mean, they've eaten our lunch for a number of years, and it's been lopsided. But of course, very recently, the Reds went in there and won four in a row. So maybe we got the start of something going. Maybe we start to eat their lunch. They'll get mad at us, and we'll have a rivalry.
And again, we are talking with NKU sports business professor Joe Cobbs and author and sports journalist John Arardi. I understand, Professor Cobbs, you're going to be expanding this research. I think you said before we went on the air that you might be looking at college basketball, for example, next. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. We started with college football actually in 2013, and then moved into the major professional sports here in the United States and Canada. And we recently then launched a survey for college basketball, as well as we've taken it international. We've collected some data in Indian Premier League cricket, and now we have an English Premier League survey that's live, and as well as a few other sports, Australian rules football. And so we're really looking to expand the scope and see if some of what we've learned about rivalry in the United States translates to these other contexts and what are sort of the potential nuances there. You know, John brings up some fantastic points, some illustrations of kind of one of the ingredients in that rivalry recipe that we see over and over is these conspicuous moments, right? These moments in the competition between two teams that really stick with one or both fan bases. And he provided some great examples that could be, and I agree with him, potential sparks to other opponents becoming more of a rivalry. It's a dynamic thing, right? It changes over time. And he provided us some great examples of that locally.
You know, one thing that I find charming, I guess, about sports and their fans. And I do follow a lot of sports guys on social media, and I see some weird articles that get people riled up. But sometimes they rank rivalries, and then people are angry that their rivalry is not as beloved as someone else's rivalry. John, can you help me break that down? Like, I'm specifically thinking about college basketball, which I'm more well-versed in than other, you know, athletics. So, like, if it's Duke and North Carolina, or if it's Kentucky and Louisville, you know, people get real passionate if their rivalry isn't ranked ahead of another rivalry.
That is so true. And, of course, we see here, and the professor mentioned college basketball. I mean, what better rivalry? And talk about fan bases hating one another. Cincinnati and Xavier, my God, that's got to be, for us, certainly at the top of the list. And I don't care what they say about Tobacco Road in North Carolina. I mean, this rivalry, nothing's more hated than Xavier and Cincinnati. But I'm with you, Michael. It amuses me. And I think the reason it does is because, you know, whether it be a love relationship or an athletic relationship, you know, you want to be noticed. I mean, if you don't get noticed, you know, you don't have a chance. And it's almost like it's a degree of, if you can't love me, hate me, but pay attention to me. Don't be apathetic about me. So I think that's what we're getting at here. You just want to be in the game. You want to be in the mix. And let's face it, if you're really good, a lot of people are going to hate you. So I think that's what you want to be. You want to be really good and be worried about the consequences later.
And I guess since you're an NKU professor, Joe, and I'm an NKU grad, and NKU is a burgeoning Division I program, you know, in the Horizon League, the men's basketball program has gone to the NCAA tournament a couple times, only eligible to go four times. Pretty cool. What do we think is going to emerge as it relates to the top rival for the Norse?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, as I said, we're collecting data on it now, but I can certainly, you know, being involved with the athletic program there and being on campus now for close to 10 years. And I teach a rivalry class, and we talk about this in class quite a bit with the students. Once they learn sort of the common ingredients to a rivalry that we see over and over again, and then I have them sort of apply it to our context at NKU. And what comes up over and over again as a potential rival is Wright State. And that's because some of the ingredients that we see across rivalries, like those conspicuous moments, you have some memorable moments that have happened in competition against Wright State already in the last few years. You know, we've only been in the Horizon League with Wright State for a few years, but they've met in some conference championship games. You know, there's been some buzzer beaters. Both programs have been really successful in men's basketball, which of course gets the most attention, but also in some other sports. We have sort of a shared supply pool in terms of the supply of student athletes, in terms of the recruiting territories overlap. So that's another ingredient. The spatial proximity is another ingredient in that recipe. There's less than 100 miles between the campuses. And one last one that I'll mention is strong similarity between the opponents in terms of when we think about the institutions, they're of similar size. They're both regional comprehensive universities. They were founded both about 50 years ago. And sometimes, you know, sticking with that sibling example that we mentioned earlier, you know, the biggest sibling rivalries are between like twins, right? And so that strong similarity can really create a rivalry. So I think we'll see that grow in the future.
That will be fun. Another local regional rivalry. I appreciate the conversation today with NKU sports business professor Joe Cobbs and author and sports journalist John Arardi. John, thanks so much for being with us and working well together, not being rivals during this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition here on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Let's talk again tomorrow.